time when truth is censored, one name stands out, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and I want to extend a warm welcome to everyone who's joining us here this week for our weekly morning coffee with Dr. T. For the last 22 years, I've given literally thousands of interviews on radios, TV, podcasts, live conferences and seminars, and almost all my information has been one way or another just simply on vaccines. But I wanted to get more information out to you, and I wanted to set up something that I could take open forum questions and answers from the people who come and join us here early in the morning. So this is meant to be educational. It's also meant to be somewhat fun. Just think of this as though we had physically planned to go to a local coffee shop every Tuesday morning to have a chat, have a cup of coffee to start the day, and have some open forum question and answer period of time. I'll bring a little bit of information to start the conversation, but I hope that you bring your questions with you, because this is where you can get a lot of your questions answered. But please remember, I can't give any personal medical advice. It's just not advisable when I don't know you. I don't know your full history. So if you've got specific questions about your health, I can't answer them. But if you can post them in a general type of question that would be good for everyone on the group, I can do it there. So thank you so much for joining us here this morning. I decided this morning, we were chatting a little bit, to change the background. We're going to be playing around with backgrounds a little bit for the next couple of weeks, because I've been using that one that looks like a mountain that's from Banff, Canada, for probably a year or so. So we're looking for some different things. This is a picture I actually took on a beach in California. And so it's really literally a sunset, but I guess it can double as a sunrise too. So I hope everybody's doing really well today. The first thing I want to start with, because it's such a timely thing in the news, and then we'll get to your questions. Just please sure you put them in the chat. Then, and Cookie can help me bring them up. But if you put them in a chat, I'll be able to see them myself. One of the breaking news items for this week was the big win that ICANN had. ICANN is the legal arm of the High Wire with Del Bigtree. And Aaron Seary has been doggedly determined to file these lawsuits. And he's had some incredible wins. He had some wins in Mississippi. He's to get the religious exemption back. He's trying to get the religious exemptions back in New York, California, West Virginia, and Maine, which is where he's going next. But they did win a big win for the vaccine safety database, which has been around forever. It's part of the VAERS database, which is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, excuse me, that was put in place in 1987 by the FDA when the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Compensation Program law was put into place. It was a place where anybody can report an adverse event. It can be you as a person, you as a parent, you as a neighbor, you as a church or a healthcare practitioner. You can report an adverse event. Over time, and I've known about this database and talked and written about it for years, excuse me, over time, it has gotten much more difficult to use. And I think that's by design. Initially, there were only, back prior to 1991, there were only three vaccines, MMR, polio, and DPT. And that was all there were. That was, before 1991. And then in 1991, after they passed the Vaccine Injury Compensation Act, which actually gave the pharmaceutical industry a complete free pass to create anything they want and have zero liability, as long as that vaccine was on the pediatric schedule. In 1991 is when they added hepatitis B at birth. And in about that same time, I think it was the same year, maybe a year later, they added the HIB, the HIB vaccine. And then then 95 was the chickenpox vaccine. 97 was Prevnar, that started out as Prevnar 7. It's now Prevnar 20. So getting one of those vaccines for your kids is like getting 20 vaccines at the same time. And then it just went up and up and up from there to where there's now 17 approved vaccines on the schedule, multiple doses of those. They just changed the vaccine schedule. I guess you could call it like a map where they tell you, it says like ages, and down the left-hand side is all the vaccines, and across the top is the ages that you give them or the months that you give them. And it's gotten so complicated now that it has to be put together on two charts. Charts is the word I was thinking for. It has to be put together on two charts. It has footnotes. The CDC actually has a software program called COCASA that goes into doctors' offices if they want it. It's a free program. They provide, I think it's 5 to 10 hours of free educational programming for your front desk. So if somebody misses a dose of vaccine from their kids, if they missed them because they were sick, or the parents were wanting to pick and choose which vaccines their kids have, there's an entire software now that's been created to tell the doctor when the makeup doses can be put in. It has to be, you know, more than 30 days, less than 45 days. I mean, it's very complicated. And that's exactly why pediatricians kick out parents for being non-compliant, because you make them have to work, that their front desk has to go through the COCASA program and figure out how to get them back in. And there's this whole thing called the Combo 10, which are multiple doses of 10 pediatric vaccines, for which if 63% of their practice is fully vaccinated with all 10 of those vaccines, they get $400 per child, not just the 63 that are vaccinated, but all of their children, from Blue Cross Blue Shield as a bonus. And we've known about that for a while. Well, back to the VAERS database, it's, you know, when you've added in all these different doses and all these different vaccines, and you can get the DPT vaccine from 3 or 4 different manufacturers. And depending on which manufacturer it comes from, it has a different name. And so when you go into the VAERS database and you say you want to file a report because you've had an adverse event, the first hurdle to get over is to be able to identify their code that they've given to the vaccine that you think has caused an injury. And unless you're in this language and in this, and you know a lot, which is why we created Learning for You, we do all these courses and things and talk about it all the time, is to get you educated. But unless you're really, really in the vernacular, you can go in and you just see all these abbreviations and you go, well, I'm looking for MMR, where is it? And you don't really know because of all these abbreviations. That's the first hurdle. The second hurdle is that they have created a checkbox, and they only present the mildest side effects, like sore arm, fever, somnolence, you know, not, you know, being overly sleepy, decreased appetite, and you have to check the boxes in order to create that. And then at the bottom, they have a free text area where you can write in, if there's additional things that you want to write in about the severity of your adverse event, like you had a seizure or went to the emergency department, or vomiting nonstop for 36 hours or whatever it is. But you only have 250 characters, not 250 words, but 250 characters. So if you say I had, that's actually 5 characters, because it's I space H-A-D. And so you have to learn how to crunch your information down and put it into 250 characters at the bottom of the page. I mean, it's really a horrible system. And then they make it available that you can search it. There's ways that you can download the data into a spreadsheet and you can search it, which is where a lot of journalists and a lot of researchers have looked at the VAERS database, and that's how they come up with these studies that say, you know, on this particular vaccine there have been X number of reports. And so there's a way that you can download that initial data but there was never any way to download the comments and to actually read the additional things that people, the severe sort of side effects that people had. So researchers couldn't look at it. Adults, parents couldn't look at it. Nobody could look at it. So Aaron Seary and ICANN and the Highwire, you know, that's the arm of the Highwire, sued to get the release of all those database things down at the bottom, particularly for the COVID-19 jabs and how horrible that they've been. Because if you're only reporting that you had a sore arm or you were sleepy or, you know, it gave you a fever, it doesn't tell you the severity of reports that people were reporting from the COVID jab. So Aaron Seary took this to court and won, which is what we're talking about here this morning, just in that they won for the release of all of those, things at the bottom, all the free text data, so that people can go through and they can crunch the data. They can see, they can now sort it and put in how many times people had seizure, and they could sort all this data for the word seizure, and a whole bunch of the egghead researchers that do all the work, and I just report on it, can now get it. And so the judge, this district court judge, Matthew Casimark, I guess is his name, won, and they have to produce all of this data. And the first tranche just recently came out, which was 390,000 entries. So that, you know, that just tells you how many entries there have been for the COVID vaccine and also for the other vaccine. I saw a pie diagram, I think on Twitter the other day, and it looked at the number of deaths per vaccine, and it was a pie diagram. And it looked from the very beginning of when VAERS database started, which would have been 1986, and all the little slices of the pie diagram were color-coded of the number of deaths that had been reported, say, with hepatitis A or pertussis or Prevnar, any of those. And if you divided the pie diagram in half, 50% of the diagram, half of it, was in the last 3 years, the deaths reported from the COVID jab. The other half of the diagram, split up into little tiny slices in different colors, was the sum total of deaths reported for all the vaccines over all of these years. That's how horrible this jab is, and it's only going to get worse. I mean, if you remember when I did the 40 Mechanisms of Injury webinar back in May and then July of 2021, which I did the 40 mechanisms of injury in 21 or in July, people were asking me things like, yeah, when are you going to see all these deaths start coming, Dr. Tempany? I mean, really, you just sound like the Grim Reaper. And I said, in about 3 years, we're going to start to see it creep up, and it's just going to be like a hockey stick approach. And that's exactly where we are now. Remember that the Pfizer shot was released at December of 2020, and Moderna, J&J, and AstraZeneca were all released right after the first of the year in January and February of 21. So if we just put a flag in the sand in January of 21, which is like right in the middle of those releases, and it was all 21 where the vast majority of people that got the jabs, got two jabs and a booster, which would make them fully vaccinated. Most of the people got their shots in 21. We're now in 24, and I said in about 3 years, it's when we're going to see all of the deaths from all of the blood clots and the myocarditis and the sudden deaths that happen because of the inflammation of the heart that blocks off the electrical system and all of these things. And the whole issue of when Stu Peters did his video on Died Suddenly and his documentary, and Ed Dowd released his book on Died Suddenly, now we're starting to really see it. There's hardly anybody around you that has had the jab, that people don't start seeing various people just snuffed out. They're just gone. And it's amazing to me how many people are still unwilling to make the connect dots. I was out at that rehab program in Utah. I've been back for, this is my second week, but I was out there for 2 weeks and I met a gal out there who actually was talking about that she thought she had long haul COVID and she had a lot of symptoms, and she was out there because she had a whole bunch of visual problems. And one day at lunch, she came over and started asking me questions about various other testings and things that she could possibly do to identify maybe what was wrong and why she was having all these symptoms. And as I was listening to her litany of symptoms, I said, in my mind, I was thinking, this is a vaccine injury. And so I said to her, have you received the COVID jab? She said, yep, 2 jabs and a booster. And then 4 months later, I was so sick with COVID that I actually had to be in the hospital. I said, why do you think you got COVID after having 3 jabs? She said, because I have 4 kids and they bring home all of these bugs, and that's why I got it. I said, you know that the COVID vaccines, the COVID jabs, they call them vaccines, shuts down your immune system and makes you more susceptible to COVID and to all kinds of other infections. She said, don't start with me. This has nothing to do with the vaccines that I got. So, okay, fine. Even though your seizures, your visual disturbances, your equilibrium problems, your irritable bowel problems, I mean, your personality problems, I mean, all these different things all started since you've had the jabs. You know, people are not willing to say that. And I think part of that is because how can you say, if it's the jabs, that means I did it to myself. And so this is why keeping in the conversation and keeping, you know, I don't know. I mean, she left like 2 days later. She had already been there. The program is 2 weeks and she'd already been there for a week and a half when I talked to her. So I don't know if when she got home, if she started giving that some thought. She was in her 30s and maybe she started giving that some thought. I'm not real sure. But the circling back again to this whole thing, this with ICANN, they've now released 930,000 datas, and they're finding that people in the thousands that experienced rapid heart rates, dizziness, fatigue, diarrhea, and thousands went to the emergency department within 48 hours of receiving the shot. There were 600 users that specifically noted they were pregnant when they received the shots, and 22 of them had miscarriages, which was about 4, when you do the math, that's about 4%. And you wonder if any of them were followed, or any of them, if the government ever even really cares. So at the bottom, it says, this ruling sends a clear message to our federal agencies. We are not moving on and forgetting about the pandemic and what they did to people with the release of this bioweapon and forcing people to get injected against their will, or making them make a really severe, difficult choice between getting the shot and maintaining their job and being able to provide for their families. They were months away from retirement and getting a full pension, and they had to get the jab in order to receive that. You know, it's really, really bad. And ICANN makes a statement: we will not stop until all the data is released to the public and the true transparency and accountability around COVID-19 jabs is out there. So it's available. The data's out there. And there's people like Tracy Beans. I don't know if you guys follow her. She's an incredible investigative journalist that she focuses on government corruption. I haven't followed her things in a while. I used to read her stuff a lot, but she's one of the people that's engaged in crunching this data. And when she gets it out there, it's going to be just great. I'll just read her little bio here in case you want to follow up with Tracy. She said she hosts the Dark to Light podcast, found on all major video and podcasting platforms. She is a biweekly guest on the Joe Pags radio show and has been on Steve Bannon's War Room and is a frequent guest on the Emerald Robinson show. Tracy is the editor-in-chief of UncoverDC.com. So she is putting her highly skilled investigative hands into crunching this data, and so there's more to come. So I just wanted to fill you in a little bit about VAERS and about how it works and how it doesn't work and how this is a big win for us. And hopefully it's just not more data churning. You know, Ed Dowd has churned what I call so much data when he's looked at all the people between the ages of 18 and 65 that are on chronic disability. And why I wrote an article, I believe, in 2022 on my Substack. It was called Help Wanted Signs Everywhere, Where Are the Workers? And it was way back then that I was thinking that, you know, there's lots of reasons why people are looking, you know, have a help wanted sign and they can't find workers. And one of them is that people are dead. People have just died in that age group. And Ed Dowd's data shows it. So Ed Dowd crunches the data. You know, Stu Peters has done, you know, a couple of documentaries, you know, the thing about the water with Brian Artis, and also the Died Suddenly thing with the embalmers. A whole bunch of us have been putting out data and crunching out things for 3 years. I hope it's not just more data crunching and more like, look here, look here, look here, and nothing is done about it. There's no accountability. Nobody has lost their job. No, in fact, they've got promoted. You know, Walensky, who is the head of the CDC, is now, you know, promoted up. She has, you know, and she's got a better job, you know, just like Julie Gerberding. I always refer to her as Julie Gerberding Dong, who was the previous head of the CDC, who was then in a year, because government rules say that you have to wait 1 year from the time you leave your government job to take a job in industry. Well, when she waited her year, and 2 days after her year was up, she took a job as advisor and maybe even vice president. I don't remember the title, for Merck Global Vaccines. Now, can you imagine all the information that she had about vaccines in government conversations inside of being the head of the CDC for 3-4 years, however many years she was there, what she brought to Merck that they rewarded her heavily for? I mean, the former head of the FDA goes, goes over and becomes a big wig in the big ag industry. I mean, it's just the revolving door of government and big industry is just endless. And so I'm hoping, again, I'll say this and then we'll move on, that this isn't just more data crunching, that maybe Aaron Seary or somebody, I mean, certainly not anybody in our government, I mean, nobody in Congress has, you know, other than, you know, Senator Johnson out of Wisconsin and maybe Rand Paul, the two of them have sort of tried to put a little bit of heat on Fauci and called, you know, they tried to impeach the guy who runs the southern border, and they couldn't even get that passed for the dismal job that he's been doing down on the southern border with the immigration problem. I mean, our Congress is so lame, and they don't do anything for the people. In fact, they are trying to pass more and more laws in terms of supporting censorship and you know, the ability for people to do nefarious things to us without accountability and without any sort of punishment for some of the things they've done. So I'm hoping that this will turn some things around. Some people will lose their jobs. They'll go to jail. They'll lose their big pensions. I mean, Fauci should lose all of his pension and all of his money that he's made from the government all these years, and he should pay it back because of the dismal job that he's done, and on and on and on. So I hope that this isn't just a, yep, you're right, look at all these terrible things, oh well, and then we just move on. Because there's this thing called, you know, people are having what we've described as you know, COVID burnout. They don't want to talk about it anymore. It happened. Oh well, all my family members got the jabs. I got the jabs. Oh well, I can't do anything about it. You know, I just need to get back to watching TikTok videos. And that seems to be the mentality these days. And it makes me sad that how they have dumbed down America. We've gone from reading, you know, 600-page books to 300-page books to 20-page ebooks or something that's on Kindle to 24 characters on Twitter, which has changed now that it's now X, but it used to be 24 characters. And people want to watch just TikTok videos all day long because that's all they want, is they want to see people pointing at things, and they want to, if it's more than a minute, they're not interested. That's the state of the conditioning that we've been in to dumb down America and to decrease our attention span for anything of value. That's the one thing I can say is really good about Substack. I think that Substacks, because there's a lot of Substack writers. I put out 2 Substacks a week. One is Eye on the Evidence and the other is On Walking with God. That I think Substack has drawn people back in to reading, to actually reading. And when people find authors that they enjoy and they like their voice and they like to listen to what they have, and it's not just, you know, rambling, I think that makes people read more. But even Substack is going more to videos, People want to watch or listen to videos they don't really want to read. And we're teaching our children to hate Trump and to be aware of the transgender movement and to be particular about their pronouns of what they, how they talk to people, but we're not teaching them reading, writing, or in arithmetic of how to function in the world. So that so many kids, when they get to graduate, even from high school, they're functionally illiterate because they can't read or spell or write. So hopefully this, something will come of this. Hopefully that people will really see it. And if you want the link, I think that Cookie has the link to that. Do you have it, Cookie?
Link specifically.
It's, let me see. It's called, I don't know.
Is it the ICANN one, the Highwire one?
Yeah, it's thehighwire.com/editorial/breaking-first-look at the free text COVID vaccine safety data that the CD wanted to hide. Do you have that one?
Yeah, it's a really long link. I put it into the Zoom chat a few times. I'll put it there again.
Okay.
But it is a really long link to look at. But if you go to thehighwire.com and just look at the vaccine safety data, you can search vaccine safety data, they'll be able to pull it up. You're muted, Dr.
Let's
T.
Let's move on to some of the questions. So there's some questions here, maybe that will generate some other ones. So the first question is, any thought on a 22-month-old toddler who is not talking? I'm sure he's made all of his well baby visits, and I understand he understands and responds appropriately. If he, you know, I guess the question would be, is he making any sort of noises? Is he making, you know, mama, dada? Is he making any sort of verbal noises at all? Would be the first thing I would check for, you know, and because if he's not making any sort of verbal initiations, even with mama, dada, you know, the words that kids learn right at first, you know, that is a really serious problem. If he is making those sort of, you know, basic sounds that kids first learn to do before they learn to talk, and he's not progressing, and he's been fully vaccinated, he's been brain injured, that requires something along this, you know, to getting into some early intervention speech therapy programs where they teach even really young kids on how to verbalize, you know, and do, you know, initials like bat and T and D, and so they can say dog, 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 or mama, 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 or dada, dada, dada. They, both of those, if he's 22 months old and he's not talking, those are serious issues that need to be looked into, because what happens with brain development, particularly brain development with kids, early kids, not just, you know, your brain develops and restores your whole life. But with early development, there are windows of opportunity of brain development and how it develops sequentially. And if you miss that opportunity and you don't develop during that window and you go on and now you're a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old, you can't go back. The brain just doesn't develop in that area. So if you've got an almost 2-year-old who is not talking, that really requires some intervention and some good diagnostics. That's really important.
You know, Dr. T, if I could just share, and I only offer because before I met my hero over here, Dr. T, my son was vaccine injured. And while he was babbling at first, he lost all speech and all ability to communicate. And what helped him was, yes, what Dr. T mentioned, we did early intervention with speech. We totally revamped his diet, and we started to see a, and Dr. T would know this term better because she does it, a doctor who would do
cranial osteopathy, yep.
Yes, she would do that on him. And between the three, it was a struggle, and it came back slowly, but he gained all his speech back to the point where people didn't realize that he was not talking for a few years there. So I only offer that to, you know, to add to what Dr. T was saying.
Yeah, thank you for contributing that, Cookie. That's really important. And thanks for bringing up about the cranial osteopathy. You know, years and at the my very first practice that when I was still working in the ER, my very first practice that I did osteopathic manipulation and acupuncture, which was way back in 1995. I worked in the office Monday, Wednesday, Friday. It was a little 600 square foot office. So it was a tiny little office with a waiting room, a reception area, and one treatment room. It was teeny tiny. And I treated, at the time, I didn't realize they were vaccine injured. Because remember, this is 1995, 96, kind of in that range. And I didn't really start taking my deep dive and learning all that I know now about vaccines until September of 2000. So during that time, they would bring in kids that were autistic or on the spectrum or had all kinds of emotional problems or just were unruly. And I would just treat them with cranial osteopathy. It was my only tool in the toolbox at that time. And when I did that, I can tell you that by about the third or fourth visit, there were certain kids that I still remember to this day that at first the parents had to bring them in and literally body hold them down on the table. You know, they put them on the table on their back and the mom or the dad or both would hold their arms and legs and just like put their body weight over top of that child to make them hold still enough so that I could do the cranial manipulation, which is non-painful. It's an easy sort of thing when you know what you're doing. It's relatively quick. And I remember this one young boy, he was probably 3 or 4 in that age group. And the parents had to literally body hold him on the table to get him to go on the table and be there. By about the third or fourth visit, they would come in once a week. By the third or fourth visit, he would crawl up on the table and they would just have to lightly hold him there to kind of remind him to lay still. And by about the sixth visit, he would walk in and crawl up on the table on his own and lay there because obviously he made the connection that this was helping him, that it made his brain not feel like it had hamsters running through it. And that was a older child. I remember about 12 or 13 who had a food additive sensitivity. And we treated him at TIMC with our allergy elimination program for the food additives. And I also did some cranial manipulation on him. He was maybe 12 or 13 at the time. He was a twin. This was like 10 years ago, maybe longer. He was a twin. And he was so angry and so unruly that when he would come home from school, he'd be punching holes in walls and slamming doors to the point where they would come off the hinges. And just, it was so bad that they were literally thinking about taking him out of the home because he was so disruptive to his twin brother and his two younger siblings who were terribly afraid of him that they were thinking about taking him out of the home. Well, the mom brought him up, kind of snuck him up because the dad didn't believe in alternative things. She actually saved her money from grocery money. I remember this because it was such a remarkable story that if she got, say, $100 a week from her husband for groceries, she would set $10 aside every week until she could save up enough money to bring him up to do allergy elimination, what we call in our office SRT, to desensitize him to all these food things that were causing him to go crazy. And when the one that seemed to be the most, that made him the most crazy was red dye. And when we got to the place where we desensitized him to red dye and I was doing cranial manipulation on him, all that anger, all that disruptive stuff just stopped. And I remember him saying to me, the hamsters aren't running in my head anymore. He said, that's how I would feel all day, like there was just hamsters running in my head all day long and I couldn't focus and it would just get on my nerves. And by the end of the day, I'd be so angry because of this feeling. And finally, that was gone due to a food additive and doing some cranial manipulation and making the blood flow and lymphatics and things in his head back to normal. So that, you know, is a true real life story. And his mom used to bring him in to the clinic like once a year just for like a checkup after that. Tilly, I mean, he was about 12, maybe 13 at the time. And every year he came in and he was just fine. He would need just a little tune-up of, you know, the cranial manipulation. We might do one or two allergy treatments just to tighten up the whole system and make it work better. So sometimes when you've got kids like this 22-month-old that's not talking and other kids that are, you know, disruptive and angry and you can't control them and you're always yelling at them, whether it's kids or grandkids or nieces and nephews, it's a food problem. It's something that they're eating. And also some structural medicine can really help. So there. So now the next question that I have is, quick, Cookie, were there any comments or anything from that that you wanted me to address?
No, people are just commenting on how we can't stop fighting for the children and how it, you know, it's heartbreaking to hear all of these things. And people don't really realize, you know, what they're doing, not only to themselves, but to their children. But I agree with what you were talking about with the cranial, I still can't say it, the cranial osteopathy, because my son still remembers and he'll tell you that it felt like a head massage. And yeah. To this day, he takes our hands when he's like a little stressed or anything. He will take our hand and put it on his head so that we could massage his head. And it all goes back to when he was first getting the manipulations, you know?
Yeah. And it does feel kind of like that because the cranial, the bones, there's 22 bones in the head and they all are, and they put together, if you ever looked at a picture of a skull, like in a, you know, when you're studying anatomy or just go online and look at a picture of a skull, where those little interdigitations are, when you can see them on the skull, that from a baby skull, when it grows and it comes together and forms a solid skull, those interdigitations are there because there's movement. When you think about like growth plates on your arm or your hand, everybody is born with growth plates, right? Because you have little short bones and they have to grow into big bones. And then at your wrist and at your elbow and knees and all these different places, those growth plates fuse into a solid bone because there's no movement there. Your bones in your head are not like a solid box of rocks. There is lots of movement there. And you know, it just is amazing to me that doctors don't get this because every system in our body is a dynamic system. You know, when you think about breathing, you breathe in and out and in and out. The recoil of exhale is because, you know, when you inhale, when those, you know, when you stretch those nerves, when you just, it's when you exhale, unless you're exhaling forcefully and you just exhale passively, it's like a normal recoil system. All the peristalsis of our intestinal tract, you know, from the time you eat until it comes out the other end, it moves. There's things going like this to move the food along your entire many feet of intestinal tract. In your kidney, when your kidney makes urine, it goes down the ureter because the ureter, it's not just gravity. The ureter is making little spasm, little motions down to your bladder to move the urine along. Our arteries recoil with our heartbeats. You know, that's how we get our blood pressure. You know, everything in our system is a dynamic system. Why they can't understand that the central nervous system is also got intrinsic movement and has an expansion and a contraction, it's movement. And that's where what happens with the bones of the skull. And that's where those little interdigitations are. It moves in this direction about 3 to 4 millimeters, and then it recoils. And as it recoils, the front and the back moves out about 3 to 4 millimeters. Years and years ago, I remember seeing a functional MRI that came out of France that showed the cerebrospinal fluid going up the spinal cord into the brain and then back down. And that was because of the fluctuation movement of the bones. And there's 22 bones in the head. They all fit together in a really normal pattern. And when they move out and they move in, and that fluctuates the cerebrospinal fluid, the blood flow, the lymphatics, all those things in through your brain. And so if you've had a concussion or you've had a trauma or kids playing soccer, God forbid, or kids playing football, and if you notice that even in the NFL, they've gone away from every time you do something good, all of these big, strong players coming up and pounding people on their helmets, you know, congratulations, because they were causing brain injuries by doing that. So the whole thing about, it's just very lightly, and you're trained very lightly to to move those bones back and forth and in and out. There's, you know, when you first take the cranial osteopathy course, it's a 40-hour course. I mean, 40. And you usually have to take it twice. So that's 80 hours of intense training, one-on-one table training. There'll be two people on a table and an instructor teaching you what to do. It's very subtle, but extremely powerful. And I would put a plug in here for cranial osteopathy done by a trained osteopath, which is much different than up-ledger cranial manipulation done by massage therapists. And I've had both, and I've done both. You know, I've been at massage places where the massage therapist said, well, I've taken the up-ledger course. I know how to do cranial manipulation. And they put their hands on my head, and I just about smacked their wrists to get them off my head. Now, that isn't to say that some people, like a lot of people, are very talented, very skilled, and they've learned the up-ledger way of doing things. Because Dr. Up-ledger was an osteopath that took the cranial osteopathy and sort of, I don't know, from an osteopath's perspective, we refer to it as bastardized the profession, because he dumbed it down to making it be just a technique that anybody can learn. Like truck drivers can take his course, like, you know, gardeners can take your course, like anybody that has no medical background and understand the ramifications of the cranial osteopathy on the whole rest of the body. Anybody can take that course, anybody. Now, some people are better at it than others. They have gifted, talented hands, and some people learn how to do it really well, and they go through the advanced training programs and the subspecialty programs, and some people can do visceral manipulation, and they can do things with the fascia release and things like that. There is a subset of massage therapists and even physical therapists that I think are very talented and are very, very good at this, but I would say the vast majority are not, and that's maybe my particular bias for cranial osteopathy. But you can go to the American Academy of Osteopathy, and you have to put that into the search engine. You have to put the whole thing in there, American Academy of Osteopathy. And that takes you to the website of people, of doctors like myself, who are specifically trained in cranial manipulation and have a special interest in structure-function relationships and musculoskeletal issues. Their headquarters is in Indianapolis. Their doctor search thing doesn't work very well. I've tried to send people there where they have a physician locator where supposedly you should be able to put in your zip code and find somebody in your area. It doesn't work very well. You have to go in and you actually have to search their website, or the fastest way to find somebody, I would say, is to call them directly. Just call the academy in Indianapolis. They're very helpful. The people that work there are extremely nice, and they're very helpful because they believe in the academy, and they believe in the osteopathy, and they want to get people to the right physicians that are in their area. So there, if you go to the American Academy of Osteopathy, there's another organization called the Sutherland Cranial Teaching Foundation. It's kind of an offshoot of that. They do things a little bit differently, but that's another place where you can find practitioners in your area. It's Sutherland, S-U-T-H-E-R-L-A-N-D, Sutherland Cranial Teaching Foundation. You can find a practitioner that way too. I haven't been on their site in a while. I'm not sure about their practitioner locator, but these are ways that you can actually go and find somebody to be able to do this. And I would say people that have had headaches, migraines, traumatic brain injuries, concussions, strokes. I mean, it really helped me a lot early on when I had the stroke, because I saw a friend of mine who does good cranial osteopathy, and it just improved my balance and improved my blood flow. And so, you know, anytime you've had, and if you've got kids that are playing soccer or football, that they're constantly getting banged on the head, maybe even volleyball, because sometimes people will spike the ball and smack them in the head. Any time of thing like that, this should be a practitioner type that you have in your armamentarium. So let me quickly go through the other questions that are here. I have numbness on the top of my right foot that started when I had shoulder surgery 7 years ago. I had a nerve test done a few years ago that came out negative. Any suggestions of what I can do to get rid of the numbness on my foot? Well, oh gosh, Mary, this is a really long explanation. there is something called neural therapy, N-E-U-R-A-L, neural therapy. It's scar injection therapy, and it started out of Germany back in the 30s or the 40s, and that sometimes if you've had a surgery in somewhere in your body, it can disrupt a dermatome somewhere else, and you have to inject that scar. And you use like lidocaine or procaine, and you do it. It's somebody that has to be trained in this, and you just do a subcutaneous, you just take that lidocaine and you just slide it right underneath the scar and you inject it along the way. It really doesn't hurt, but there's a whole big anatomic and physiological reason for that. I used to do tons of scar injections to relieve all kinds of symptoms. So I would say that if you can look that up on the internet, neural, N-E-U-R-A-L, neural therapy, and see if you can find somebody in your area and then call them and tell them that what you're looking for is scar injections to find out if that's what they do, because different people use neural therapy for different things, and see if that wouldn't make a difference to the numbness on your foot. Let's see. Why do they call LDL and HDL cholesterol when they serve cells as cell maintenance? I experienced corporate doctoring where they claim that 110 is high and they want LDL to be 50. My research suggests Pfizer is making billions on weaponizing statin drugs. I think this is a cause of diabetes too. Could I recommend a good book? Oh, Chuck, that's a really, really good question. There's lots of good books out there about, you know, the cholesterol scam. Dr. Steven Sinatra back probably 20 years ago and I just found out yesterday, somebody wrote a comment on my Substack that I didn't realize that he had passed away, but I guess that shouldn't surprise me. You know, we're all getting older, and many of the people that were mentors and I learned from long time ago, like 30 years ago, were 20 years older than me at the time. So I'm in my 60s, so it shouldn't surprise me that some of these people, God rest their souls, are passing on. But if you can find a good book by Dr. Steven Sinatra, like the singer, Dr. Sinatra, or if you go out to Google and you do, not Google, out to Amazon, you can actually do a search for the cholesterol scam. Those books are really, really good things that I think would answer a lot of your questions. And that was a good question. Thank you for bringing that up. That was really good. The next question, because I'm running short on time here. I am an unjabbed nurse in California, and I'm noticing colds are becoming more frequent and resistant to supplements and holistic natural remedies, meaning harder to get rid of for the unjabbed too. Aside from constant spraying and EMF, et cetera, are you experiencing the same? It's getting harder and harder to navigate. Yes, it really is. In fact, I would say that's been going on for 20 years, at least 15, long before the COVID jab stuff. I remember several practitioner friends of mine who have practices like what I've had here in Cleveland. It's Tenpenny Integrative Medical Center, where you can find it. TenpennyImc.com is the website for things that we do. I can remember we were talking about, I'm going to say it was at least 10 years ago, maybe longer. We were talking about how patients' symptoms were becoming more complex. It was getting harder and harder to treat them, and that our usual and customary tools in our toolbox, you know, there's a thing in being a doctor. One of the things that they say is, 80% of what you do will take care, you know, what you do in your practice will help 80% of the people. And what keeps you going back to conferences and learning new things and adding new tools to your toolbox is that 20% that don't really respond to the normal stuff that you do. Well, I think that 20% that don't respond has gotten much bigger. And I think it's because of our poor diets, you know, all the food additives. We were talking about this last night on my Brighteon show. I did an interview last night on my Brighteon show that will be posted next week because Brighteon has taken a little hiatus. And I did an interview with Dr. Jane Ruby, which will be aired next Monday night. And then it will be posted on drtenpenny.substack.com next Thursday. And we were talking about the things with food additives and things being generally recommended as safe. And the only reason all of this garbage has gotten into our food is because the FDA is paid off and bought off by big ag, big food, big chemical, and big pharma. All they do are they're just stampers. They just stamp things through. So when they have an additive, a food additive, that they say it's generally recommended as safe, it's because they take that one single isolated food additive and they do a mouse study with it. And they may even give that mouse, in that mouse study, 10, 20, 30 times what the normal dose would be for that one food additive. And if nothing happens during that study, they will say, well, it was safe, but they don't have any long-term studies on what did that 10 times amount that do for that one food additive through the longevity of those mice. I mean, if they didn't just sacrifice them for the study, I mean, what would happen if they allowed them to live for another 5 years? What they don't test is this combination of all these different food additives. I mean, when you pick up something at the grocery store, and in a package or like a canned item, and you see like 10, 12, 15 different food additives on it, that's never been tested together to be safe. All of those in things have become allowed to be in our food because individually they were determined to be safe, but they don't test them all together. And the same thing happens with pharmaceutical prescription drugs. They test one drug all by itself and see what happens. And then there may be a few studies that are done that it's one drug against one other drug. But the average American these days is on 8 prescription medications, 8. And they don't, you know, what happens when you've got all 8 of those mixed into one body and those drugs break down into active metabolites and they run into all these different problems? That's never been tested. So we are the experiment. We're just the long-term experiment of the stuff that's in our food, the food additives, and all those different things. So yes, Dina, thank you for your comment. It's getting harder and harder to navigate, which is why detoxification is the best that we can be. You know, I follow some of Dr. Anna Mahalcia's stuff. I don't read all of her stuff. It's kind of overwhelming. But I read some of her Substacks, and she recently made a comment that I thought was really true, where she said, the days of total detoxification are over. We're never going to be able to totally detox our bodies and pristinely, you know, get back to absolutely clean stuff. First of all, you can't eat that clean. There's stuff in our air. There's stuff in our water. I mean, it's just there's stuff in our laundry detergent. There's stuff everywhere. We just can't live in a bubble. So the day to be completely detoxified are over, but that means that it's important to do the best to keep your toxic load down. So that's where like our zeolite spray is super important. I mean, it's really, really important to do all the things that we do in terms of detoxification. With zeolite is really, really important. It's the easiest. It's the best. It's a spray. It's totally safe. You can take it underneath your tongue. You can give it to your dog or your cats. You can give it to pregnant women. You can give it to babies. And so as that toxic load is building up, the best we can do is to keep it down to a minimum. One other thing I will say about eating organic, you know, everybody's like, oh, I eat organic. I hate that word. It drives me crazy. And so because of the way people say it and they make it be like a badge of honor or something. Well, here's the trick, people. The USDA allows things to be labeled as organic when it can have up to 30% of junk in it. Bioengineered foods, which may be genetically modified or they may be genetically engineered. There's a new law that went into place at the beginning of last year about labeling. And if you pick up a can of soup, you pick up anything these days, it will say contains bioengineered ingredients because that's a law. And it's a deceptive law. And I'm actually writing about it. There's a whole, what started out to be a Substack turned into a 44-page paper on bioengineered food. And so I've really done a lot of research in this area. And so if you just eat if it's organic, it's better than non-organic, but it can still, if it says organic, it still can maintain 30% of junk in it. The only thing that is appropriately labeled as that is really clean is if it says it's 100% organic. That is an FTC violation. If it's 100%, says 100% organic on the label, and it's got junk in it. So when you're shopping, and you can see 100% organic, like I've seen it like with orange juice and sometimes with kefir, or sometimes with cheeses and stuff like that. It's the next step up that I want you guys to be aware of that's really important. So with that, I have to tell you that Cookie, were you going to say something?
It's me, Michelle. I just
Oh.
want to speak it the code for anybody who wants to look for your the discount on the zeolite you were talking about. We have a $50 discount, and for Americans, it comes out to about $13 for the bottle with the addition, because there's an additional discount when they choose auto ship, and there's no commitment necessary. Just go and get yourself the bottle. It's $13. Anyway, the code is DRTDetox.com. DRTDetox.com.
Okay. So the last question that's in here is about shedding, and those are always really long answers, and I'm out of time for this morning, so I'm not going to be able to get to that. I would just say that shedding really occurs. It's a real phenomenon, and a lot of the people, and so that's why it's important to keep detoxing, keeping your system as clean as you possibly can, having colloidal silver on hand, taking oral EDTA, which is available through our store. We have that available now of oral EDTA because that is another natural chelator that goes along with the zeolite spray. We have to continue to stay in the fight to do as best we can to keep our toxic load down. It's never going to be zero, and even if you could get it to zero, it's not going to stay there. It's going to creep back up. It's going to, just because of living in the horrible thing of what they've done to our world. They've contaminated our food, our fish, our vegetables, our air, our water, everything. So we have to just do the best we can to keep that toxic load down. And I take the zeolite spray. It sits upstairs next to my vitamins. I take it every single morning and I take it every single night because I've got a big lump of supplements I take in the morning, or I actually kind of put them in a little cup and I put them by my computer and I kind of take them over the course of the day. Then I've got another big lump of supplements I take in the evening before I go to bed, and I take the zeolite spray in the morning and at night because we just have to keep our toxic load down to the lowest part that we can. And like Michelle said, you can go to, and another place where you can find our products is if you just go to Dr. T Detox, DRT, DETOX, DRTDetox.com. I mean, that will also take you to some of our products. So we're out of time for this morning. So I want to thank everybody who came here this morning. We talked about a lot of interesting things today. We had really great questions. So each week when you come, I kind of do my best. I got through all the questions that were in the chat, with the exception of the shedding one. And, that's going to be an ongoing conversation. We can talk about that next week. So I want to thank you so much for joining us here this morning for our little coffee clutch. My coffee cup this morning says, "My cup runneth over," which is from Psalm 83 verse 5. My staff, my TIMC staff, got me this for a Christmas present. So my cup runneth over with joy. It's so good to be back and be talking to all of you guys. And thank you for your patience and your support. Thank you, and God love you to my team who held down the fort while I was not here. And so thank you so much to every single one of my team. If you want to go to any of our top suggestions, you can go to drtenpenny.com/shop, shop, drtenpenny.com/shop. And please follow up with my Substacks, my Eye on the Evidence Substack, which is drtenpenny.substack.com, or I'm Walking with God, which is tenpennywalkwithgod.substack.com. I put a lot of time into those, and I really hope that you'll be there. And tonight, it's Tuesday night, so tonight we will do Happy Hour with Dr. T at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and we're following up for the rest of this month in February with Dr. Justin Prock on Thursday night with Bible Eschatology, and of course, Critically Thinking with Dr. T and Dr. P at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. I will put in a little plug here to talk to for you guys to start marking your calendars that starting April 4th, for 5 weeks, we're going to be doing a five doc boot camp. So we'll have once a week the five docs for 5 weeks talking about really interesting stuff you haven't heard other in other places. And that will be culminated with a 4-hour webinar on Saturday, May the 4th, I believe it is.
Yes, May the 4th.
That is a solutions-based webinar that all the five docs will get together. We're going to be talking about a great lot of informational things during the five-week course, culminating with a four-hour solutions webinar for mind, body, and spirit with the five docs. And so you're going to start hearing more about that this coming week. That registration will be open, and we'll have some early registration bonuses of things that you can do. But start marking out your calendar Thursday night, April 4th, and the 11th, the 18th, all the way through the month of April, and then May the 4th. And it will be at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, right after Critically Thinking with Dr. T and Dr. P. That, you know, Critically Thinking is 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern time. The boot camp will be from 8:30 to 10. It will all be recorded. It will all be stored in the learningforyou.org website. So if you miss it or if you want to go back and review it, it will all be there for you once you've registered. So I want to thank everybody again. Thank you to my team. Thank you to Cookie, Heather, Michelle, everybody who was in, Diane, everybody who was here this morning. If I missed anybody, forgive me. I love all you guys. And so until the next time, remember to lean into God, trust him for everything. He will never let you down. Thank you so much for being here. Have a great rest of your week. We'll see you tonight at Happy Hour with Dr. T. And goodbye and God bless. Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use, and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant. You can take it when you're nursing. You can give it to little children. You can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out, the heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch with in our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years. Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off. We also have an apparel line on our store that has just the best things. In fact, I go and shop at my own store. I mean, I really do go and buy stuff out of my own store. They have t-shirts and sweatshirts and cups and mugs and totes. We've got a great designer. We're always adding new things all the time. And either one of those two product lines, either our private label supplements, our OptiLine, the white bottles with the green leaves on it, or with the apparel store, and they're two separate stores. They do not have a single shopping cart. It's like you go in one store and get your groceries and you go to the other store and get your shoes. Well, these are two separate stores, but you can use the same affiliate code. If you use the code podcast, when you go to the checkout, you can get 10% off on everything you buy every time you go to the store. Gold and silver always has value. It never goes to zero. And it's a great place to store your wealth. It's a great place to have it for inheritance, for your children, for your grandchildren. And when you can actually get the coins itself, when you can actually do that, you can actually even have a coin collection. I think that some of the older Walking Liberty silver dollars are just amazing, that come from the early 1900s. And I think that everybody should have some of those, not only for history, but as a place to protect your wealth, protect your money going forward. It never goes to zero. Like our paper fiat money with hyperinflation and the things that we may be seeing in the future, our dollar could literally go to zero, could be worth nothing. You might not even be able to barter with it, but you will always have value in gold and silver. You'll always be able to eat with it. You'll be able to trade with it. And it's a great place to store your wealth. Particular company that we work with, because we really, again, trust their product. We believe that this company has a high level of integrity and they are great with customer service. To learn more, go to bit.ly/gold-silver-DRT. That's bit.ly/gold-silver-DRT.